Today's program has been brought to you by Roberta's Pizza, robertaspizza.com.
Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
There's some kind of crazy big football game last week, Dancing Sharks. I don't know what was going on, but we were on a brief hiatus, and we're back this week on Arts and Seizures, as ever, broadcasting live from Roberta's here in Bushwick, and sitting in the McGuire chair.
I am Judy McGuire.
Judy, your beard is so thick today.
What's up?
We here at Arts and Seizures, we scan the world, like wide world of sports.
What's my boyfriend again? Spanos? Stavros?
And we went so far to find a co-host slash guest today. I went all the way back into the restaurant to drag him off the bar. It's Patrick Martins, our old friend, founder of Heritage Radio, and co-author with me. It's his book, really, of the Carnivore's Manifesto. And I figured, since I wrote a book with you and I helped you raise your child, Max, I didn't really have to do much more research than that. Good to see you, Patrick.
First of all, it's Patrick. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I'm a big fan, Mike.
Long time listener, first time something.
As your only listener for the first season, and now you have millions, and it's nice that you remember the people like me and you bring me back.
I had to climb over you to get to this lofted position here on the radio station.
You asked of me. I'm no longer a host. I came back and I hosted the main course for the first time in 6-10 weeks.
And how'd that go back on the radio?
We interviewed Christina Lecky, who's the chef of the Breslin, and Tucker Schwartz, who is an artist and is in charge of all the catering events for Roberta's.
With having you guys, it's like having Seinfeld before me. You know, it's like the must.
And yeah,
CTV lineup. Anybody coming after Seinfeld was guaranteed, to let everybody down, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Has there ever been a number two show that follows that became successful? Like, it's hard to say. Spinoff shows, there's many.
I'm sort of like your Jeffersons to your... I'm the Jeffersons to your All in the Family.
I was thinking more Maud.
I'm more like the Rhoda to your Mary Tyler Moore.
I was thinking more Maud, but whatever. B. Arthur.
Liz in the booth is laughing, but she's far too young to get any of these jokes.
B. Arthur. That's a good... She was old. Do you remember B. Arthur in the 10,000-year-old man with Mel Brooks? And he's like, I am a philosopher. They're playing way back in like the Jesus days. He's like, I'm a philosopher. I think about things and I talk about things and I break them down. And she's like, so you're a bullshit artist.
Well, here at Arts and Seizures, bullshit. Bullshit is the coin of the realm. Speaking of which, how's it going with our book, The Carnivore's Manifesto? I didn't see it climbing up the bestseller list this week.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. I mean, maybe it needed more marketing from us, more of a social media presence from us. I mean, I don't think that many people have read it, to be honest with you. It's a good
book. Well, I beg to differ. I think the book is out there, and it's seeping into the culture. Seeping. It's seeping into the culture. It's climbing up. I mean,
like oil and water.
I'm surprised, actually. I was out last night, and a couple people came up to me and said, oh my God, I loved your meat book so much. So, and I don't know. It's there. And it's
maybe happening. They were talking about Joe's book, Restaurant Man.
Well, he has the benefit of being a TV star. And you're just...
How many shows does he have now?
You're a former radio star.
Have you been a guest on his shows ever on television?
No, but we just cut some videos for our Led Zeppelin wine tasting program. So that's something to look forward to, where we pair great wines with our favorite Led Zeppelin songs.
Very nice.
Celebration Day, for instance, called for sparkling wine, as you can imagine, and on and on. And no Stairway to Heaven. Well, I'll tell you what, though. I loved writing this book with you, and I'm really proud of this book. And our tour was great.
It's one of the top 10 books you've ever written, you once said.
It's definitely one of the top 38 books I've ever written. I love going on the road with you. That was a lot of fun. And I mean, I was playing my guitar inside a butcher shop.
So did you ever think we would be friends? I mean, we spent 2 days a week for 6 to 8 months together.
Well, this cemented it. We were friends beforehand, and I wasn't sure we were going to come through the other side holding hands. But here we are.
Yeah, you're very patient. You're a very slow walker.
Job, patient-wise. Let me tell you something, buddy.
I have a question. Speaking of Job, whatever happened to Ham? It was one of Noah's kids who went off by himself. Ham. What was his story?
I think he's in Pearl Jam now.
Oh, he's in Pearl Jam. good
so,
for him.
So, well, let's talk a little bit about the Carnivores Manifesto. I think one thing about this book that did hurt our marketing of the book, aside from the fact that we got hammered by the whole Amazon Hachette feud, though, is that the book was marketed in the sort of the picture on the cover is this big tank of red meat, and I never really liked this cover because it just seems so caveman and so like testosterone and, you know, and tailgating and cooking out. And
it's not what the book was about.
It's so not what the book is about.
Book is more about Peter Singer's animal liberation. You know, he wrote a seminal book in the 70s about animal rights, and he was against factory farming and against experimentation on animals, like for shampoos and stuff. And he was absolutely right. And this was really part of that former vegetarian movement that kind of eats meat but wants to know how it's okay. And this laid out the 50 ways to eat meat and help improve the world at the same time.
Well, it's not even just about eating meat. It's about a sustainable food system, but it's about living well. It's about having fun, and it's about eating, too, and eating for pleasure, which is nice because I don't see enough of that in food writing that people forget that, you know, eating is fun and it's pleasurable, and sometimes, you know, it's nice that it's nutritious. It's nice that
we're a country that spends more time and money on dieting than on eating.
That's what Carlo Petrini said, and it's just amazing. He said if his grandmother saw this country that spent more money losing weight than actually putting food in their mouths,
yeah,
she would be appalled. And
everyone
right.
is always worried about things. They come from a
not me,
of
obviously.
Safety worry.
I'm letting myself go.
Yes. No, you're good. You're 5 feet tall, 300 pounds. I think you're totally in shape.
I'm ready to go. I can cannonball with the best of them. Well, you know, we should go through a couple chapters of the book. I was thinking, Patrick, and I want to revisit a couple of my favorite. I'm still very proud of our chapter about sleep with your butcher because, you know, as tongue-in-cheek as that may be, it is really about having personal relationships with your vendors, with your butcher, with your, you know, your baker, your candlestick maker, but with your bartender and with your grocer and the guy that sells you produce. And you married the cheesemonger.
Well, I had a big fallout with my candlestick maker, and I don't want to bring that up. But I will say that if you don't shop at 5 to 6 stores every single week, you're probably not a part of the sustainable food movement. Going to Whole Foods, they're a very valuable, you know, store, but you know that's not the only place to go. You have to go and support the people who are professionals and specialists.
I agree, and I support several different bottle shops, wine shops in my neighborhood, mostly because if I just went to one shop, they would know me as a dipsomaniac, and I'd probably have my...
Do you go in knowing what you want, or do you go and say, help me?
Well, you know, I know. I go a little of both. I go in with an idea, and, you know, maybe, you know, they can help me focus what I want. I might say, hey, let's go to Italy tonight, and, you know, and I want to spend under $20, or I want to spend $30 on a bottle of wine, and, you know, here I'm having the Orchiette with the Broccoli Rob tonight, or we're having meat for dinner, or whatever it is, you know, what do you think? And especially when I want to go uptown a little further and say, hey, you know, we're, you know, New Year's Eve, we made steak au poivre, I wanted a nice Bordeaux, you know, $50, $60 bottle of wine, a couple of $60 bottles of wine, I definitely need some help picking those
up. Do you go to South Africa and Chile, or do you stick with Italy and Napa Valley?
I don't, and I should spend more time
I think no,
Chile.
I think the opposite. But stick with what you know.
But I think there are some really good, nice wines, you know, coming out of those parts of the world. And, you know, lately I've been buying wine from Oregon. Pinot Noir from Oregon is fantastic, and it's undermarketed relative to the Pinot Noirs from California.
And it's which one is the one that goes sideways? The Longitude or Latitude is the same as Barolo Barbaresco.
Ah, which is...
So, you know, the best.
Well, but that... but unfortunately, it doesn't mean the soil is the same or the...
No, it is. It's very similar. It's just the terroir is different.
The terroir is different. Well, let's talk about terroir for a second. That's a word that you invented. Terroir, of course, is of the earth, of the land. And
well, the very first war there was titwar. That's how humanity started. And then it evolved into terroir. Many, many centuries later.
So, the terroir. So, basically, what you're doing with terroir is giving us some head.
Yes.
Explain terroir.
Terroir is terroir of the mind.
Tet being the French word for head, of course.
Exactly. So, and war, knowledge. So titwar is knowledge of the tit. Tetwar is knowledge of skills and creative energies that are passed down from one creative to another.
That's right.
So, like, it can be a bunch of philosophers in Greenwich Village creating a terroir for existentialism, but it could also be in the kitchen of Chez Panisse, you know, where one person is just inventing new vegetables like mash and, you know, growing a whole culture of food in the Northern California.
And I love that because we live in New York City, probably, where there's probably more talent per square foot than any other place in the world. And
where, in Brooklyn?
Maybe in Brooklyn now, but New York City as a whole certainly.
And Portland, Oregon, you once said?
Well, Portland, Oregon's got its own terroir of its own sustainable culture. And obviously, you know, in Chicago, all these great electric blues come out of Chicago, New York, and a terroir for jazz. I mean, New York's just amazing because there's so much literature that comes out of New York and more recently Brooklyn and art. And it created a culture that could foster, you know, abstract expressionism on one hand and great pizza ovens on the other.
What about footstools in Blaine?
The footstools in Blaine or the wrestling masterminds in Stamford, Connecticut.
That is actually a very important terroir. Do you still watch wrestling like season to season, like during the regular season, or do you only watch the big events?
Well, you know, I haven't been following as closely this year, honestly. After
Who are the top personalities?
After our friend CM Punk walked off the WWE set, I honestly lost a lot of interest in it because it just hasn't been as funny as it used to be in a lot of ways. And WrestleMania is coming up, and I'll tune back in. But this is the first year in many years that I haven't really been following. I'll tell you what, a bigger problem is I don't have a baseball team. I had a very bad divorce with the New York Yankees.
Why, because of A-Rod?
Well, because of A-Rod when he signed with the team, not now, and all this shit that's come out, and the fact that he's a cheater. We all knew he was an asshole. But I knew it then when they were paying him. What's his salary? It's like, you know, it's like the gross national product.
Well, they were continuing a salary that was started in the Texas Ranger system.
Right, but it was just this crazy amount of money, and, you know, he never seemed like the kind of guy, you know, you wanted to hang out with. And, you know, and he already caused rifts the second he got there with Jeter. But it has to do with, like, listen, corporate sports suck. I don't like the Steinbrenners. I don't like George Steinbrenner. I know everybody loved him because he was buying all these winning teams through the late 1990s, and that was a great team.
He actually didn't buy it. They only won in the late 70s with him. In the 90s, he had been suspended for tampering, you know, doing things. It was Dick Michael that built those teams in the 90s.
Suspended. There's that whole Dave Winfield thing, the Harry Spiro gambling mess. But, you know, I never liked Steinbrenner. He always held up the city to build a new stadium. He was going to move to New Jersey or this.
He was a huge conservative.
I don't like the way that's why he was a felon. He was pardoned by Ronald Reagan. You know that. The final moments of the Reagan presidency.
Really?
He pardoned Nixon. He pardoned Steinbrenner, and he was a felon. He had been convicted of illegal campaign contributions to the Nixon campaign, and it was a really sleazy way he did it, too. Basically, he was having his employees at American Shipbuilding kick back their bonuses to CREEP, the Committee to Re-Elect the President, or whatever, you know, the Nixon campaign fund.
CREEP.
And then asked them to lie about it, you know, under oath. They asked, you know, asked them to perjure themselves. That's kind of really slimy. So that's why he was a felon. That's why Billy Martin said about Reggie Jackson and
Dave
Winfield and George Steinbrenner. One's a liar and the other's a felon.
Oh, really? Why? But, what was Reggie Jackson?
Oh, like? I think Billy and Reggie never got along.
Yeah, they did. They've gotten a big fight. Right, yeah. in at the stadium in front of all the people.
But, you know, I lived through Billy Ball, 1, 2, 3, and 4, and Stick Ball and Stump Ball
you got a lot of Billy
Martin. Bucky Ball and Dallas Ball and, you know, all these things. And I loved Billy Martin and I love Joe Torres like everybody else in New York did. Don't like the way Steinbrenner treated him. I don't like... First of all, I don't like the fact that my tax dollars support their business. That really bothers me. And it's a private industry, you know... You know, Bruce Springsteen has played at Giants Stadium like dozens of more times than the actual Giants have. You know, and he contributes, and he pays taxes on the money that he makes in the state of New Jersey, unlike the Giants, which, you know, get away scot-free because they want the team there. It's just bad economics. Anyway,
there's a big
fucking
thing
corporate
in the-
baseball. I didn't like the way they treated Joe Torre. I don't like the new stadium, $2,400 seats. I know that's, you know, you can get in for $25, I think, to the bleachers. But the point is, it was so tone-deaf and just so, you know, cold to, like, long-term fans. You know, guys like me, they cannot afford to go to a baseball game and spend $200 just to walk through the gate. I used to go to 25, 30 games a year. It was $5 to get in to the game, and, you know, it was great. It was less than a movie.
Well, I mean, they also made the stadium much smaller, which makes it nicer and more intimate, so therefore they have to sign.
I'm never going. I've said it so many times in public that I will never step foot in the new Yankee Stadium.
What?
Never.
Yes, you will. Shea Stadium, you always go. I mean,
City Field, what do they call it now? It's a nice facility. It's not charming in any possible way. You know, it's not like, you know, Camden Yards or some of these wonderful baseball
Camden
parks.
Camden Yards is a collage of all the other stadiums. They
It's pastiche, but they got it right.
They need to create their own sense of identity. They have a statue of Babe Ruth in front of Camden Yards, the man most responsible from keeping them from winning championships over an entire century. They should hate Babe Ruth. I don't care if he was born over second base, or whenever it was. It was an old house before it was a stadium. That's why they never win. They have no identity. There's no anger there. Whereas like Philly, they might suck for 10 years in a row, but then they'll win a championship. The Orioles will never win a championship until they redesign Camden Yards.
Well, maybe I should be a Baltimore.
They have the old polo grounds.
Maybe I should become an Orioles fan. So the question is, though, so I don't have a team, so when I watch baseball, and I love the game, but I don't have a horse in the race anymore, so when I'm watching it, I'm not rooting for anybody. So what is it? I'm just watching art? I mean, I feel like this emotional detachment that I really needed to watch the game. And I love the game of baseball.
Maybe you're free to be a fair weather fan. Like, you have a good excuse, so now you can just go with the team that turns you on the most. Detroit Tigers, Arizona Diamondbacks.
You know, I had no problem. Like, you know, there were certain teams over I used to like the Brewers team. Had such a great team.
Because they were beer. Because the guy would jump into a big thing of beer every time they did it.
There's that. I liked the A's teams in the late 80s before we all found out that they were all juicing.
You got to still love the A's now. They still are kind of like a money ball kind of.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. So maybe I will just have to pick a team, but I got to get back into it. It's hard. Not having a team is kind of...
You strike me as
a
Pittsburgh fan.
Pirates fan?
Yeah. It's local-ish.
Ish. I don't know. Do I like those yellow uniforms? See, there are all these things to consider.
They have the old hats. Remember, there was like a high rise.
All these things to consider. I like the Yankee uniforms. I like that they don't have their names on the back of the home uniforms. It's kind of cool.
You either like them or you don't. You can't like their uniforms, but not.
Well,
like
it's like the Yankees are like.
You have to.
It's like
everything.
An ex-girlfriend that I sort of kind of publicly wish well, but like when the Red Sox beat them, I was like feeling like great glee inside.
I used to go to the bleachers all the time, like you were saying, and there was this little kid once. They were playing the Seattle Mariners at the time. Ken Griffey Jr. was the best player in baseball, and this little kid he was a center fielder, which is the position closest to the bleachers, and every inning, this kid would go up and say, "Mr. Griffey, Mr. Griffey," and he did it every inning. It was mind-numbing. By the bottom of the eighth, finally, Ken Griffey looks back, and the entire bleachers fall silent and is like, "What is this kid going to say?" And the kid's like, "Fuck you!" And we were like, "Yes!" And we carried him back to his parents in like the 20th row and like, "You raised a great kid. That is awesome."
That's the kind of emotional sophistication that the sport has been lacking of late. Well, I find
there's no more edge. All these players, they play golf with each other. They're friends. They're all doing ads together. In the old days, there was always a ribbing. You hated the other team. That's why I like players Kevin Garnett.
A guy comes in, sliding to second base, gingerly sliding to second base. No one slides their spikes up high anymore.
Because they don't want to end his career.
Hey, Earl, how's the wife? How's the kids?
Yeah. There's no edge anymore. That's why I like these old school players. I mean, I can think in basketball right now, Kevin Garnett, he's an old school guy. He will hate the other team no matter who they're playing. I like that. That's the way
you got to throw an elbow once in a while.
And if you're a fan, you got to yell at the other team. I went to the Clippers game with our season tickets at the Nets, and Big Baby Davis, who's a very big player, very fat for the other team, and I was like, Oprah.
That's
I was
not
like
very nice.
Nice ups, precious. And I was like, no, that's the way you're supposed to do it. You're supposed to get in their heads.
No, you got to razz the other team. So I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. We've been talking about meat. We've been talking about baseball. I brought some meat music with me today. Remember when we were on tour and we were doing gigs in butcher shops? That was something else, right? Anyway.
I've always said, of all my musician friends, you're in the top 500.
Thank you very much. And among the people who've founded Heritage Radio, you're...
in the top 90 percentile?
Something like that. Okay.
Thank you.
Here we are in Arts and Seizure, and it's not the meat. It's the motion.
It ain't the meat, it's the motion. Makes your daddy wanna rock. It ain't the meat, it's the motion. It's the movement that gives it the sock. Now I had a girl so doggone thin. No meat, no bones, she was just all skin. One thing about her I can understand. She wraps all around me like a rubber band. It ain't the meat, it's the motion. Makes your daddy wanna rock. It ain't the meat, it's the motion. It's the movement that gives it the sock. It ain't the meat, it's the motion. Make sure daddy wanna rock. It ain't the meat, it's the motion. It's the movement that gets the sock. You find some girls who are big and fat. Some fellows don't like to see them like that. But I like to see them big and tall. The bigger they come, the harder they fall. It ain't the meat, it's the motion. Makes your daddy wanna rock. It ain't the meat, it's the motion. It's the movement that gives it the sock.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hey, what's up? This is John Norris, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
All right, we're back. Arts and seizures. And don't forget, Heritage Radio is listener-supported, and we count on you to keep the show running. So if you're listening on your computer machine and you see a button that says be a member or donate, don't be afraid to click it, and you'll get some kind of groovy tote bag in the mail. Maybe even Patrick will come over your house and cook you a pork chop.
Yes.
So we're here with Patrick Martins, author of the Carnivores Manifesto. And
The Carnifesto.
The Carnifesto, as you like to call it.
It's really 50 ways to save the world.
50 ways
to
save
while also eating meat.
The world.
And yourself.
Oh, and speaking of...
It's a great great book.
Saving the world.
Alexis is one of the wittiest individuals I've ever met. She is very, 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 very intelligent. She has blessed us with her presence at the Heritage Foods USA office, and things have never been so charismatic and intelligent and smart before, and sales is proving it. She's backing up her charisma with sales.
Well, how about that?
That is quite the warm welcome. Thank you. I don't think anyone's ever said that many nice things about me.
Patrick, Max is about to grow up without a father. Martins was my nickname until I met you, Alexis.
That was the threat I received.
No, but Alexis is very, quiet. You know, she doesn't make a big to-do about things, but she quietly drops genius all around. And then by the end of it, you don't even notice what's happened, but you just notice that people love your organization, and it brings really infuses energy into the whole movement.
Wow.
Yeah, it's actually
we don't
what
get
I have.
People like her usually. You know, we usually get like some food studies person from NYU, like studied with Marion Nestle, who I love, but you know, they weren't necessarily crossing over into more galactic areas.
Thank
you know,
Patrick.
Levels.
Well, all right.
I appreciate that.
So you're on the radio this morning. You've taken over Patrick's show.
I did, yeah. Phil and I are co-hosting the main course, and have been having a lot of fun with that. So it's an interesting opportunity. I never would have thought.
And to back up what I'm saying, statistics for the main course have skyrocketed since Alexis has been on.
Are you kidding? With a lead-in like that, my ratings are through the roof. You know, that's where I got my start on the main course. When Patrick started this radio station, such as it was, this Tin Shack, you were like the only show on. You had like a 19-hour show on Sundays.
Yes.
Okay.
And occupy radio.
It was the first show of the week and the last.
It was just Patrick and Katie, and I was like, well, come on in and blab for a while with Edison, and eventually it was like, come on and be the co-host. Eventually it was like, just start your own goddamn show already.
No, but for as one-dimensional as I am, like as an individual, you know, no, I'm pretty much my own way. I always did see genius also in people like you, Mike, and you are kind of part of the undercurrent of society, you know, wrestling, porn, all this stuff, and yet it is just as powerful and also a lot more real than what these scumbags at Goldman Sachs and all that do. I mean, this is real people, real life, and it's real wit, and wit is a dying art form, you know, the reaction, conversation, back and forth, repartees.
What happened to Patrick?
I'm just a big fan.
He came in the studio. He lit up like a Christmas tree.
Also, we had a lot of trouble in the studio. Once, you know, Jack had so many shows that he started to need to delegate. And we had ups and downs. We had great people like Joe, but there were a lot of downs, too, until Liz came. And now, all of a sudden, the studio is anchored on Sundays in a way that hasn't been done in a long time.
It's true. Working with Liz in the booth has been one of the great pleasures of the Arts and Seizures experience. Speaking of great pleasures of the Arts and Seizures experience, I brought along a new toy we're talking about meat, we're talking about baseball. I think we should talk about marijuana.
We're about to get munchies.
And, well, why not? Because we are operating
marijuana,
at a pizzeria.
What's
so
that?
This is like a new toy. This is like the ultimate in new technology. It's a disposable vaporizer.
Don't throw it out yet.
It's like an e-cigarette, and it comes preloaded with hash oil.
What?
And this is the kind of thing that you could buy if you went into a recreational or medical dispensary in Colorado legally over the counter. But of course, here in New York, I get it on the black market. I got some kid in a bicycle comes to my house.
Don't bring up race.
And check it out, Patrick. So you just hit on that thing. Hit on this thing like a.
He'll catch it in his mouth.
All right.
Like an e-cigarette. And
I don't understand how they make them.
This is the technology.
Oh, I feel it.
Right? That'll get you where you want to go.
All right, everyone who's listening, if there is anyone, get near your computer.
Patrick, that's not how technology works.
Okay, all the witty repartee is about to go right out the window.
Repartee? She said titter on the last show instead of Twitter.
And what happened?
I meant to
talk
say
about
titter.
Old school.
And what happened?
I run
the internet
social media,
lit up.
So I'm kind of an expert in these areas. But people make mistakes. We're human.
She's
I'm
also
human.
Very smart. She's trying to unite Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube into a mega behemoth company called YouTwitface.
Yeah. It's my $1 million idea.
So how's that working for you? This thing, let's see.
I don't know. Is my dad listening to this show?
Okay, Mike, for those of you who cannot see, there's a truck full of Doritos that Mike is having delivered now into the back of
the last time we got stoned on the show, we got yelled at. We're doing our Apocalypso show. Originally, it was Apocalypse. That was our big pot tasting show. But then the next time we did it, I wanted to give it a more Caribbean flair, so I made it Apocalypso. And apparently, the ventilation system in the studio is somehow connected to like the dining room.
You smoke out the dining room?
So it's kind of like
in the old days.
Yeah, so like we were like puffing away here. And since we had one of the owners, Roberta's, in the studio with us, I thought we'd be clear, but we got yelled at. Jack yelled at us, actually.
Well, yeah, he's always trying to keep the standards high in the relationship with the Robertas. In the old days, it was allowed. Now, with new technology, it might be allowed again.
The new technology. So how's that vaporizer trick working for you?
What?
So what's next? Carnivore's Manifesto? Are we going to write another book? What are we going to do?
Well, apparently sales, Alexis has taken on personally a goal, which is, again, a goal much higher than most people would set for themselves.
Well, she has a higher calling.
60,000 copies
60,000
in the next 600,000
copies.
600,000
copies. 6 million copies.
Unless we sell 6,000, it will not be made into a paperback.
6 million copies.
Mike, did you hear that?
I heard that.
6,000 copies for a paperback. We can do it.
Let's do it. So, well, I hope everybody out there Listener Land is buying a copy of the Carnivore's Manifesto.
It's a great book, Mike.
A great
You're not
book.
Just saying that. You don't
I believe in this book very much.
I will throw out a little bit of flattery here since Patrick has been doling it all out.
Did you say flabbery?
A little bit of flabbery here.
You can throw some shade if you want, Alexis. I'm used to it.
I was working for Heritage. I was looking for another job. I wasn't, I was doing the part-time thing. And
you're like, when can I get out of here?
It was just, it was just another job.
The pork chops are addictive.
When the time that it changed is when I got a copy of the Carnivore's Manifesto and I started to read it. And then I realized, like, oh, shit, there's a lot of things in common. There's a lot of, like, ideological similarities and just ways to go about issues that aren't proselytizing, but they're just, like, practical solutions.
They're real.
It was very practical.
Corby Cummer said it was one of the
That's
food books of
here.
The year.
We were named in
the
Atlantic Magazine.
Top food book of 2014.
2014 in the Atlantic, which is nice.
And also, Corby said that this book was, like, the closest to Carlo Petrini that there is in these shores. Like, these words said in this way. A kind of guerrilla style, of throwing out a lot
hey,
of
Patrick,
ideas.
Hey, Patrick, do
all
you think Mike wants to talk on his own? I don't think so. I think you and I could just have a conversation.
Go for it,
Mike.
Go for it. I'm gonna play with this
Alexis
vaporizer
is
pen.
Talking.
Don't interrupt, Patrick.
I will say I learned a lot from writing this book with you, Patrick. But mainly, we came to it from the same point of view that like food is very personal. You put it in your mouth. There could be nothing more intimate than that.
We're both mildly overweight,
and we're we were both. letting ourselves go. How many pounds of steak
meat
tartare?
Do I have in me in my intestines
crudo,
right now?
Really, right?
Five.
Did we eat at your birthday? I mean, it was Rabelais, the feast we had at your birthday.
Rabelais, that's correct. The S is silent.
Which is coming up again. So Tuesday, you guys can do it all over.
Happy year of the goat.
My God.
It's a goat year.
It is the goat year. Patrick's been killing me on this. So the Chinese word for goat happens to also be the same word for ram and sheep, but it is goat as well. So
I had a feeling.
I interpreted
Heritage Foods is about to get rammed because with this new campaign of yours.
It's happy almost Chinese.
Because
New
amongst
year,
many
year
talents, his complete mastery of the Chinese language is
So we're doing a big thing. It's the year of the goat. It's the year of the goat, and actually, it's the year of the sheep.
No, well, I hope you'll bring a goat onto the show one day. I'd like to have a goat as a guest. I mean, there's a chapter of this book that's actually written by a goat, and I'd like to get that goat.
You
on
know,
the show.
My wife's a cheesemonger, and we have this plan of sneaking a goat into the Cubs stadium in Chicago. The curse of the Billy Goat. Mm-hmm. That's why the Cubs haven't won. So we would sneak the goat in with the national anthem team, and then be like, "The curse is over. The curse is over." And if they do win the World Series, they'll be like, "What do you want? You broke the curse. Anything you want." We're like, all concession stands have to sell goat cheese from local dairies. All the concession stands at the Cubs stadium. It would have
and
a massive transformation.
How about the hot dogs?
Goat.
Goat meat dogs.
Goat.
How about just a sustainable, humanely sourced beef hot dogs?
If we don't need goat meat, male goats, they need an outlet.
Well, I'd like to know more about
you're
this.
That's too many goats.
I'd like to know more about the Star Spangled.
Just goat cheese.
What was that? The national anthem team?
The people that sing the national anthem. You bring them in with the drummer. You put them in the drums. That's the only way to get them in. They're not just going to let you walk a goat.
The drums? The team? Okay.
Why you don't know.
Bring
the
goat. You bring the goat.
You don't know about the curse of the Billy Goat?
You bring the goat. you bring the goat. I'll bring the drums and the hash pan. As ever, it's been the fastest half hour on the internet today. Patrick, thanks for coming. Everybody, please go out and buy the Carnivore's Manifesto. Alexis, we're going to listen to you every Sunday at noon, right?
Yeah, live at noon.
So,
thanks for having me, Alexis.
So, wowie zowie.
Thanks for having me, Patrick.
Oh, guys. All right.
Thanks, Mike Edison, our favorite.
Mike, you're the best.
Well, that was a very relaxed half hour. We'll see you next week at Arts and Seizure. Thanks to everyone in Listerland and Liz in the booth. See ya.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.